The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 2, text number 70. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari. Recorded on March 20th, 2015, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Apuryamanam Machala Pratishtam Samudrama pa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayang pravishanti sarve shushantim apnoti nakama kami. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled, but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna-conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all of his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean. But he is steady in his activities, and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna-conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. A brief comment in this regard. Note the difference between inclinations and desires. He has the inclinations, but he doesn't have the desires. A very important distinction. Continuing on. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean, and therefore enjoy full peace. Note the word full. Srila Prabhupada is using that word several times here. The devotee is not disturbed because of his fullness. And now again he's using the word full. Just as the ocean is filled up with water and remains steady in that fullness of water, the devotee is filled with Krishna consciousness. And because of that fullness in Krishna consciousness, he's fully satisfied. Continuing on. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires even up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruitive workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. But the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. Note the term so-called material bondage. For him, there is no material bondage. Even if he's in a material body, it doesn't matter. He's liberated already. Therefore, the devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschadjadishatarine.
Our thanks to Srila Prabhupada for giving us this sublime wisdom. Otherwise, we would simply be lost in this material existence. He's given us the key how to become liberated even in our present material bodies. Even though we have the inclinations for sense gratification, the liberated soul, the Krishna conscious person or the Krishna conscious man, man refers to descendant of Manu. It doesn't necessarily mean male in this context. The word man also means person because Manu is the father of mankind. So those who are descendants of Manu, they are called men. There are two types of men. There's men and women. They're both, Krishna conscious man refers both to women and men. It's Krishna conscious person is, in this context, it means that. So the Krishna conscious person or the Krishna conscious man doesn't have any inclinations for material sense gratification. Because whatever he needs, he sees how Krishna is taking care of it. His only concern is how to please Krishna. The ordinary materialistic person, his whole life's energy is spent around serving his material senses. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, dushparena nalena cha, they burn like fire and they're never satisfied. You may have a fire burning, you see. You think, well, this fire is very agitated. It wants some fuel. Let me satisfy the fire by giving it some fuel. Does the fire say, okay, now I'm satisfied? No, maybe it burns hotter. So the more you feed fuel to the fire, the more it becomes greedy for more fuel, more fuel, more fuel. You can light a little match, and that match will turn into a blazing forest fire, consuming hundreds and thousands of acres of trees. One little match, you see. That's the nature of fire. So desire is like fire. It burns, and it doesn't satisfy. Never becomes satisfied. So instead of following the path of material sense gratification, The devotee, he wants to follow the pathway known as plain living and high thinking. He wants to liberate himself from slavery to these senses, mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. He doesn't want to be a slave of these. He wants to master these things so they can be calmed down. In other words, as long as you think that you're the material body, then your duty is to satisfy your senses. But what is the result? What is the reward of a lifetime of service to those senses? It's simply old age, disease, and finally, death. That's the reward for a whole lifetime of service to your senses. So an intelligent person, he understands, what is this? Simply serving these senses to get old, get sick, and die? Isn't there something better than this? Why is there such an inclination in the heart of the living being to think there must be something better than this? Because actually there is something better. That desire for liberation, that desire to know life's ultimate purpose, ultimate meaning, stems from the fact that there is actually an ultimate purpose, an ultimate meaning beyond the temporary sense desires. Just like, for example, we have a taste for water, and water exists also. It's not that you have a taste for water and there's no such thing as water. Along with the desire comes the object of satisfying the desire by nature's way. So we also have a desire for immortality. No one wants to die. Everyone wants to live. You see? So there is such a thing. It says the thirst for water indicates the presence of water. The thirst for immortality indicates the presence of immortality. So what do you do if you're in a place where there's no water? You look for the water, you see. You're in the desert, you got to look for water. Find the oasis, you see. Got to look for the water. If you're thirsty, you look for the water. So we're thirsty for immortality. Therefore, every intelligent human being, he looks for the actual purpose. What is the meaning of my existence? Why am I here? What is going on here? What is the absolute truth that will satisfy me in full? Is it? This is called human life. To simply serve your material senses, this is called animal life. This is why in the Vedas, the modern-day civilization is called a civilization based on the principle of dvipada pashu. The animals normally go on four legs. But there's a type of animal also running around. He's called a two-legged animal. Dvi is two, pada is feet, and pashu is animal. The two-footed animal, that's the human being. And when he gets old, he's called tripada pashu because he walks with a cane. So don't be a dvipada pashu, becoming a tripada pashu. Become an actual human being. Human being means, why am I here? What is the purpose of my existence? How can I achieve the perfection of consciousness where I'm completely free from all anxieties? This is intelligence, you see. This is proper utilization of the human life. So the Vedas say, don't be a fool, don't remain in the darkness. Tamasi ma jyotirgama, come out of the darkness, come into the light. You may think, well, the darkness is so powerful, how can I ever get out of it? It's just so overpowering. But you know what? Light is much more powerful than darkness. What's the proof? Go into a dark room and light a match and see what happens. That little match will illuminate the whole room. It'll be all the way over to the distant wall, you'll see the light bouncing off the wall. You see? Now, conversely, take a jar full of darkness, you see. Go out into the bright sunlight and unscrew the lid and see how much influence that darkness will have on the bright day. Zero. Light destroys darkness, and darkness cannot destroy light. So therefore, light is more powerful. So if you actually take to the path of light and you give up the path of darkness, we guarantee you, you will be successful. You see, we guarantee you, you will be successful. Because light is more powerful. You're guaranteed to win. This is called enlightened. An enlightened person, an enlightened man or enlightened woman. They've come out of the darkness, they've come into the light. And therefore we pray to the spiritual master, Om Jnanate Marandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was standing in the darkness of ignorance, my eyes tightly closed shut. I was so stupid. But the spiritual master very mercifully came to me and he's forcing my eyes open with a torchlight of transcendental knowledge, you see. So somehow you can be fortunate enough to come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master who's like a lighthouse in the dark night, you see. If somehow you can come into contact with a bona fide spiritual master and open yourself up to be receptive to what he's saying, you see. His words are full of light. His words are full of spiritual power. And if you will open up your heart and allow those words to come in and do a cleansing job on your heart, then you'll become awakened, spiritually awakened being, no longer caught up in the miseries of material existence. You'll achieve this state of consciousness described here in this Bhagavad Gita verse, you see, simply by hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. And then what the natural result is, if you go on hearing from a bona fide spiritual master, you'll think, well, this sounds pretty interesting. Let me give it a try. Let me just give a try applying some of these teachings and see what it does for my consciousness. Just by hearing about it, I'm feeling so much enlightenment. Maybe if I try to apply it a little bit, I might get some more enlightenment, you see. So this is actual intelligence, to try to follow the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, to become obedient to him. By this obedience to the bona fide spiritual master, you'll be recognized by the Supreme Person who's the proprietor, observer, controller of all existence, the Supreme Being, from whom everything is coming, within whom everything exists. The spiritual master is simply a humble servant of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as soon as you give respect and importance to the representative of the Supreme Person, that Supreme then, with his unlimited power, will bestow upon you all blessings, all mercy, to bring you out of this material existence ASAP, as soon as possible. So when you contact a bona fide spiritual master, it's not just, you're not only connecting with him, you're connecting with his spiritual master and his spiritual master and his spiritual master, all the way back to the original spiritual master. In Sanskrit, this is called Adi Guru, the original spiritual master. The original spiritual master is God himself. So when you hear from the present spiritual master, who is visible before you in this material existence, his words are simply a delivery of the words coming from the Supreme Person. He's not inventing some new fancy philosophy to attract followers, no. He's simply repeating the words of the Supreme Authority, God himself, for the sake of helping people out of their miseries. He doesn't desire any followers, any name and fame. He simply wants to help people out of their suffering condition. His heart bleeds to see how much suffering is going on in the world. He can't tolerate it. Therefore, he dedicates his whole life for giving the this knowledge of the science of the self, atma-tattva, to the souls who are caught up in darkness, because he wants them to be free. He wants them to be happy. He wants to see the whole world becomes peaceful and prosperous, full of love and kindness. And this is the desire of the bona fide spiritual master. So we are fortunate enough to come in contact with such a personality. We should be very respectful. We should hear from him. I know I was very much of a fool. I had an opportunity to hear from my spiritual master. He was my spiritual master. I had turned down two opportunities to hear Prabhupada speak. I was so foolish. Twice. Once in 1969, I had an opportunity. Prabhupada was speaking just a few blocks away from where I was living, in Berkeley, California. I didn't go. I foolishly thought I was God. I didn't want the Swami to pop my little I am God bubble, you see. And then a year later, I was visiting Berkeley, and devotees said, well, there's a big festival happening in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada's going to be there. Hop in the van, we're driving down tomorrow. Come on with us. One of the brahmacharis had said, the day before or so, he said, we have to follow the higher authorities. And I was going, ooh, that sounds horrible. Because our philosophy back in the 60s was don't trust anybody over 30. That was our hippie movement, you see. Don't trust anybody over 30. And here's some brahmacharis saying we have to follow the higher authorities. My God, are you kidding? That's what I was thinking. So, you know, I was foolishly caught up in this, this selfish type of philosophy. I am God philosophy. But I didn't take advantage of Prabhupada's mercy. But later on, I became sober. I became sobered up by the school of hard knocks sobered me up a bit. And I became very serious to pray to God, meditating on Lord Jesus, how this person was a self-realized soul. What was his secret that made him the self-realized soul that he is? And I found it in the Bible. Christ says, Father, not my will, but thy will be done. I thought, ah, there you go, that's it. Eureka, I found it. I just have to pray to the Lord, please bless me, I can become his perfect servant. So when I was in that mood of begging God to please engage me purely in his service, one very great sannyasi preacher of our movement, Hari, His Holiness Vishnu Janaswami, he came to town and I started learning from him. And now I was ready, I was really ready. And I thought, well, I'm going to make an experiment, I'm going to try this. And he was a little tough on me, but it was good. He was testing me. First day I chanted 16 rounds, I said, I think I'd like to become a devotee, I told him. He said, what I'm afraid of is easy come, easy go. He was testing me, you see. Not just, oh, great, you know, another devotee, no. Let's see if you're really... You can really cut the mustard. Let's see if you can really do it. What I'm afraid of is easy come, easy go. Let's see if you really can do it or not. It was a challenge. What I'm afraid of is easy come, easy go. It was a challenge. You see. But I realized that these devotees who've given their life to serve the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, they are tasting something on a much higher plane. They are in a very elevated state of consciousness. They're tasting the bliss. I'm here on the outside of the honey jar, licking the outside of the honey jar, trying to get a taste of honey, and all I'm getting is a dry honey jar. I'm not getting the honey. They have opened the lid and their tongues are dipping down into the honey. Because they've accepted the spiritual master's authority. You see, when you actually, that's Krishna says, you have to have a guru. So as soon as you accept the authority of the spiritual masters, your very life and soul, that's when you really start to taste the honey. And it happened. As soon as I realized, wouldn't it be beautiful? I heard that song on the Radha Krishna Temple album, Samsaradava Nalalita Loka Tranaya Karyunyaganaganadvam Praptasya Kalyana Gunanavasya Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. I heard the devotees singing that in the Radha Krishna Temple album, that one that George Harrison produced, and I was blown away. What an amazing love they are experiencing. That is the pure love of surrender to Guru and Krishna. Here, for me, love is something else, you know, trying to enjoy my senses. So-called love, you see. But here is real love. Here's, they're tasting something that I'm not tasting. And being an envious person by nature, I didn't want the devotees to outdo me. I didn't want to miss out on the bliss, you see. I realized I'm missing the bliss. These devotees are tasting a bliss that I'm not tasting. I don't want to miss the bliss. So when I had that thought, and as I was listening to their wonderful voices, just like an ocean of a tidal wave of love sweeping my heart when I heard them singing their Gavastakam prayers. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be beautiful if I gave my life to Prabhupada? And the tears just came streaming down my face, and that was it. Sign me up. When can I get initiated? Because I realized, when you actually surrender to the bona fide spiritual master, the representative of God, that's when Krishna or God showers his unlimited mercy upon you. And now this person is serious, you see. They're serious about surrender to me. They're willing to surrender to my representative. So that's the key. If you'd like to achieve this state of steadiness, find a bona fide spiritual master. Hear from him, serve him, inquire from him submissively. These self-realized souls, these bona fide spiritual masters, have the power, the potency, and the kindness to fully enlighten you with transcendental wisdom, transcendental realization, and to help you become facilitated in your original pure identity as a servant of God, described in this verse, completely free of any material agitation of mind, totally peaceful, self-illuminated, self-realized souls. Is it? So I can ask now if there's any questions.
You mentioned this, the difference between the inclination and the desires.
I'm turning up the volume of my hearing aid here a little bit. Let me try again.
Yeah, you mentioned this, the difference between the inclination and
the yes, that's right. Inclinations and desires. So what's the question?
Could you explain a little bit more how
yeah.
What's the difference?
I'm really happy you asked that. It's a really potent point that Prabhupada makes sure that it's really worth going into deeper. I'm very happy you asked this question. I may have an inclination to, enjoy something. Just like a man may want to enjoy a woman, for example, you see, which is a very common inclination. A man may want to enjoy a woman. The male hormones are there, there's some stimulation. One may feel the desire to enjoy a woman. But the devotee, even if there's that inclination in his going on in his body, he just ignores it. It's not me. I don't want to mess with that stuff, you see. I've found a higher level now. Loving relationship with God not gratifying my senses. He may feel there may be some stimulus or inclination in his body, but no, not interested. He has no desire. In other words, the body may feel the inclination, but he has no desire to satisfy the bodily desire. Because he knows it's not me. It's not worth my time and energy to satisfy the inclinations that arise. My tongue may desire something. My genitals may desire something, you see. But no, I have no desire to give in to those inclinations because I know that they're the pathway to hell for me, you see. He says, no, I'm not interested in doing that. Even though the inclination may be there. As the verse itself says, he's not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but always remains still. So many desires may pass through. It's like, well, here comes a desire, you know, enjoy some beautiful woman, some desire comes in. Okay, there's the desire. Okay, hello, goodbye. You see, enjoy this woman, enjoy this woman, enjoy this woman. Okay, here you are, I see you now. Okay, bye-bye, keep going. You know, it's like that. As long as we have material bodies, these inclinations will be there to enjoy a woman or enjoy a man, you see. These inclinations will be there. But actually, Jamunacharya Albandru, he very nicely describes Yadavadi Mamacheta Krishna Padaravinde Nava Nava Rasadamunyat Yashantru Masit Tadavadi Bhattanari Sangame Smaryamane Vavati Mukushushtu Nishtivanamcha. He says that ever since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna, tasting Nava Nava Rasa, newer and newer pleasures in their transcendental service. Whenever I feel an inclination to enjoy with a woman, my lips curl with distaste and I spit the thought. You see? So he may feel the inclination, but he doesn't want to give in to that inclination. He wants to spit at that inclination. So it's not that he spits at women. Women, no. He spits at the desire to enjoy women, you see. So in that way, that verse is a good example. Whenever the inclination to enjoy sex life, you know, comes, I spit at the thumb. He doesn't desire to give in to that inclination. So in this way you can understand the distinction between inclination and desire. Yeah.
You talked about this tasting the bliss.
And yes.
That the key was to accept a spiritual master, and that really opens up for it.
Yes.
Sometimes people who come, they get like a glimpse and a preview into what a higher taste is. What triggers a glimpse into the higher taste?
Mercy. Kripa. The mercy of Krishna and the mercy of Guru is the trigger. Somehow get that mercy. Somehow or other, beg, borrow, or steal. Get the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Because that's the trigger that gives you that higher taste. Trouble is, the mercy comes, we say, no, 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 no. That's what I do. The mercy opportunity came so many times, and I kept saying, no, 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 no. That's the problem. You see, like you go out and offer the books to so many people, that's the mercy. You come and deliver the mercy to them in the form of the book. They say, no, 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 no. Isn't it? Like maybe 1 in 100, 1 in 20? How many take a book, roughly?
Oh, that differs. It's hard to say, I don't keep numbers like that. And a lot of people say no.
Yeah, maybe 20, for every 20 no's, or maybe every 50. So everyone has, depends on the day, but let's say a typical... On one day, every 20 people say no, and every 20 times somebody will say yes. So it means most people are just not taking the mercy is being given, but they're not taking it. So how can I make sure that I don't miss out on the mercy? Well, you have to understand that on your own strength you can never become a self-realized soul. You can never get free of anxieties on your own strength. When you're handcuffed, somebody else has to come and remove your handcuffs. You see? You need somebody who has a key or a saw to get you out of those handcuffs. So I require the help of a liberated soul. If I'm going to become liberated, I require the help, the mercy, the kindness, the compassion of a liberated soul. I require that. So if one knows that, then you're and one accepts that, and is, and then you're a very good, you're in a right position to take advantage of all the mercy that comes to you. But if you think, no, on my own, I will do it. I don't need devotees. I thought on my own I'm going to become self-realized, you see. I proudly thinking, on my own I will do it. I don't need to go to this Bhaktivedanta Swami. On my own I will do it, you see. But then Krishna was very kind. He gave me some heavy, heavy kicks, and I realized, I'm a lost soul. I need help, you see. I need help. So the key is really to be humble and realize you need help. And on your own strength, you're never going to make it, not in a million births. And to be humble and realize you need help. You need mercy. When you realize you need the mercy, that's when it comes and you'll appreciate it. If you think you don't need it, it'll just bounce right up. Next question. Yes?
I think that most women want to be chaste and humble and serve peacefully, and so like you said, that is to be upset or spit at the inclination, and other women, how to, like sometimes it may be a little difficult to be a young Mahatiti in our movement, and you know, sometimes you are treated like very respectfully and sometimes merely like a prostitute.
Can you help me repeat what she asked?
Maybe I didn't get the point. Maybe you can ask a question.
The question is that how to encourage perhaps that we have a respectful relationship between the sexes, and that the women
between what did she say?
Relationship between the men.
How to have a proper respect between the men and women in ISKCON?
Not that they are treated as prostitutes.
Yes. That is called Mataji. My mother. You were my mother, is it? That is the proper move. Now, some women say, don't call me Mataji, call me Prabhu. I'm offended if you call me Mataji. Some women are saying that now in movement. But they forget that Prabhupada, there's Mother Jasoda, there's Mother Radharani is also called Mother Radharani, Prabhupada. So Mother is a very respectful title, and actually Mother is also Prabhu. Wasn't when you grew up as a kid, wasn't your mother also your Prabhu? Your mother and father are both Prabhus. They can both chastise you and punish you or encourage you, isn't it? The mother and father are both our masters, isn't it? Your mother was your master. So mother is also Prabhu. So it was not that to have proper respect between men and women. We have to drop Mataji because it's some sexist term from a sexist Vedic culture. It's not like that. In the Vedic culture, the women were given the highest honor and respect. Now the women are disrespected and abused like anything. The just like that lady, that old woman was just practically raped in Birkaman, in Vrindavan. Maybe you heard that. So that 80-year-old woman was practically raped on the Birkaman pass in Vrindavan, of all places. So in the Vedic culture, the women were always very protected. Just like Prabhupada gave the example of his own mother. He said even if she wanted to go next door to some social function, she would either go in a carriage or in a palanquin carried by four men. And this is just, they weren't like rich, they were just a middle class family. They weren't like ultra rich people. The father just had a simple cloth shop. They weren't like ultra rich people. They're just middle class. And there was so much protection. See, Prabhupada said, carried in a palanquin by four men. Not by four women. Four men would carry her next door or to some social function in a palanquin. That's the respect. That's pretty respectful. When you want to go somewhere, four men come in and put you in a, and you sit in a palanquin and four men carry you somewhere. Maybe we should have that institute that is come. We should have four male carriers for every woman. When they want to go somewhere, we put them in a pallet, four male carriers. I think maybe we should make that a GBC revolution. Every woman should have four male carriers. What do you think? You think it'll pass the GBC? I don't think so, but it's an idea. We don't have enough men, I think, to do that. Four men for every woman to carry them in the palanquin when they need to go somewhere. Yeah?
This is the desire that the women had, it, to be independent. They don't want any protection.
Yeah. The trouble, let's be honest about it. The men are a bunch of rascals nowadays. The men are not, they don't know how to protect women. The men are very selfish. They're not like in the Vedic culture. It's a problem. What can I say?
Yeah. Men have been rascals all life.
Huh?
That's why the women need the protection.
Tell me, I lost it.
Men have been rascals all the time. Yeah. They have not been practicing Krishna Bhakti. So the women have not been. The woman wants the equal rights, so men are taking more advantage of them.
Yeah. Prabhupada gives that example, however, for this women's liberation idea from. And I remember when I was in high school back in the U.S. in the 50s. If you got a girl pregnant, you marry her. That's it. Finished. Now you got to get married. You made a girl pregnant, marriage, that's it. There's nothing else to do except get married. That was the system formerly in the U.S. when I was in high school. But nowadays, you're pregnant, your problem. Either have an abortion or go on welfare. I'm not going to maintain you, I'm not going to protect you, nothing. You see? And that's so-called liberation, you see. Formerly, when the women were protected, that was the proper. They were more protected formerly. Of course, not fully protected as in Vedic culture, but they were more protected formerly. And thinking, now we've advanced, but they're less protected now. They're more abused now than ever before. So, what is the solution? How would you treat your mom? How would you treat your mother? That's what we have to do. How will I treat? This is my mother. According to Bhagavad Gita, austerity of the body is to offer respectful obeisance to your mother and father. So the ladies there also are respectful prabhus, that we can bow down at their feet just like anyone else. So there's some thoughts on that.
Thank you.
Yeah?
Disrespect for women existed even in the Vedic times. I mean, the Draupadi story about the sari.
What is he saying?
Even in Vedic times, there were disrespect of women, such as when Draupadi was disrobed or dishonored.
Yeah.
So it's not only the Kali Yuga that we are in now, but it was also that time.
Yeah. Yeah, men are by exploiters by nature. That's why they want to disrupt Draupadi. Yeah. Men are lusty and try to enjoy. It's a fact. They want to strip. They want to stay going to a naked dance parlor. Men are very degraded, actually. A man who's not Krishna conscious. Devotees didn't do that. That was the non-devotees who disrobed Draupadi, not devotees. You know, a non-devotee man, you know, they can. They just want to see women as some object of enjoyment. It's very demeaning. It's very impersonal. It's very cruel.
For example, Prabhupada made a standard that a woman can be protected and not seen by men. Women should be standing in the back, but women want the equal right to go front, so the men can be always seeing them and being lusty over the women. It's a good example.
Yeah.
Women wants equal rights with the men, but a woman has to think that when a man has a nature, he's not going to suffer. And woman wants to enjoy the same equal level with the man, then woman is the one who is going to suffer.
Yeah.
Not the man. That knowledge woman should have.
Yeah.
The Prabhupada says also that when woman is inclined with the chastity and all that, and remains little low level on their side, then the men will give them more respect, just like Prabhupada gives his own example. When they were sitting on the stairs, and the woman, who sweeper woman, came, and she put her broom down because of two.
She didn't want to pass through the men.
She didn't want
to just brush through the men because they were occupied. Yeah, she just stood there. She didn't say a word.
And then Prabhupada and the other men.
They got up. They honored her for her. They appreciated her chastity, and they immediately got up. Oh, this woman is waiting. They immediately got up and got out of the way so she could come through. She was just considered low class sweeper woman. They could see she's very high class. By her chastity, she's very, very high class, and they gave her all respect. Prabhupada, yeah, it's an example of Prabhupada, yeah.
So that's why we are lucky.
Yeah.
Chastity.
Now,
yeah. Chastity.
Yeah, that chastity is a very important thing. Prabhupada said there's two qualities for a woman, chaste and a good cook. He said, any woman who is chaste, any one of our girls who is chaste and have a good cook, I'll personally arrange to get her a husband, Prabhupada said that. He would personally arrange. Any girl in our movement who is chaste and a good cook, he'll personally arrange to get her a husband. Personally take her. That was Prabhupada's appreciation for these qualities. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I would like to connect to your morning lecture. You said that GBC sometimes was voting, and what the majority was voted, the Prabhupada also voted with them.
Yeah. Can you repeat that for me? I'll have him.
Yeah. Something about that, like Sarasvati was speaking against voting.
No,
the spiritual level. On the spiritual level, on the modern level, it's okay, but it should not be done on the spiritual level.
What is it?
He said on the mundane level, it's okay with voting. On the spiritual level, it should not be done.
Oh, he said. Now he Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati wanted there to be a GBC for his Gaudiya Mathas. He ordered them to form a GBC to govern the society after he left. But they neglected his order and the whole thing fell apart. He wanted there to be such a system for the Gaudiya Mathas. There was one Gaudiya Mathas institution. It's like ISKCON is one institution. And he wanted they should form a GBC, a governing body commission, to manage the Gaudiya Math. And they didn't do it, and the whole thing broke apart. Now there's this Gaudiya, it's like they're all completely separate. No, they're not one movement. There's all this Gaudiya Math, they're totally separate. They're not connected in one organization. ISKCON, we're connected as one organization all over the world. They're broken up into many. They're not the Gaudiya Math of the Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's creation does not exist. It's gone, it's finished. Little splinter groups. This Gaudiya Math, that Gaudiya Math. But the Ghee Gaudiya Math that he started, it broke apart. It's no, they're not there. So the principle of GBC is a is important principle for our society, a very important thing. You can here's a little acronym: the glue that brings cooperation. GBC, glue that brings cooperation. GBC, glue that brings cooperation. We're stuck together with each other by GBC. That's what holds us together. The GBC. Glue that brings cooperation, yeah.
You gave this example of how light dissipates darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So just one matchstick in a dark room illuminates.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just thinking, we have so many centers, so many temples, so many active preaching activities all over the world,
yeah.
But still there's so much darkness.
Yes. But eventually we will overpower all the darkness. It's coming. There's a lot of it out there, as a fact. But eventually our movement will take over the world culturally. This movement will culturally conquer the whole world in due course of time. It's guaranteed in the scriptures. Sajjana durjana pangu jadda andagana prema vanyaya jubaila jagatada jana. This Krishna Ganges movement is a tidal wave of love of God. It will inundate the entire world and drown everyone, whether they are pious, impious, lame, invalid, or blind. Everyone will become inundated in this tidal wave of Chaitanya's mercy. Just like today, even talking with that Christian newspaper man, magazine man, on so many points, I showed him, you know, the superiority of our philosophy, and he just smiled. You notice that? At so many points, I showed him the superiority of our philosophy over his philosophy, and all he could do was kind of like smile. He couldn't say a word. Let's see. So the day will come when culturally this Krishna Consciousness movement will lead the whole world. The whole world will be led by this movement. The government leaders will take training from our ISKCON men how to run their countries. That day is coming. Yeah.
We know that not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we know that this day is coming. Is the date, like the pace on which the world is being enlightened, is that in our hands? Or
it's what?
Is that something we can...
That's up to us. How enthusiastic you are to preach will make a difference on world history. If you're lackadaisical about preaching, well, you just slow down the inundation of the universe. Every one of us make a difference. Each and every one of us make a difference on how fast this world's going to become Krishna conscious. Every one of us, it's like a Ratha Yatra cart, you know. Every person who pulls the rope makes a difference. It may not be very strong, but if you can just get that rope and pull a little, whatever strength you have, every person pulling that rope makes a difference, makes it easier and faster. So every person who takes up this preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya, jari deka tadikaha krishna upadeshamar agaya guru hoyatare desh, whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, you become guru and deliver the people of this universe. You see? Every person who takes up this mission of preaching, distributing books, distributing prasadam, telling people about Krishna, inviting people to our programs, etc., every single devotee makes a difference. He's bringing that day when the whole world becomes inundated with Krishna bhakti that much closer. Every person makes a difference. And every and the intensity of your desire also makes a difference. Are you intensely desiring to be fully absorbed in spreading this movement at every minute? The problem is we're thinking about our sense gratification too much. That's the problem. Too much into our sense gratification. We're slowing down the movement by doing that. But if we develop this mood of Goswami, you know, the senses must all be engaged in the service of Krishna. And this Goswami mentality, everyone is meant to be Goswami. Brahmacharis, Brahmacharinis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, Sannyasis, everyone is meant to be in the Goswami consciousness of conquering the senses by engaging all of them in the service of the Lord. By being in this mood, we're going to speed up the inundation, the global inundation, which is coming, guaranteed. But how fast it will come, that's up to us. How intense our desire is to Krishnaize this planet. And your potency to Krishnaize the planet will depend on how much you've Krishnaized yourself. Krishnaize yourself and Krishnaize the world. That's one of our mottos. Krishnaize yourself and Krishnaize the planet. Anything else? Okay. It's a good stopping time. 7:30. It's a good stopping point. So I'm just absolutely delighted that each and every one of you have come tonight. Thanks to every one of you for coming. I'm delighted to see all of you here. So please take these teachings that are coming from Prabhupada. I'm just a messenger boy. That's all I am. And take these teachings very, very seriously. Make them your life and soul. And I guarantee you, very soon you will see Krishna face to face. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.
Gaura Premanandi.
Jai.